Oilers. We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. I'm Matt Weston. Tonight, I'm joined by the biggest, the fattest, the drunkest of them all, our good pal BFD. How are you doing tonight, man?
Oh, great. I'm watching, evidently, the Breeze family sisters kissing each other, which is kind of unusual.
I don't know if I like that.
I don't know who that was. That was a bit odd. I mean, it was like a playful kiss, but not like on the lips, but... I just wanted to kick off the show with something really strange and unusual, so I think I feel good about that now.
That's typical. as long as Bridgewater's not in, I have no patience or desire to care about the New Orleans Saints.
Right.
Yeah. So did you know that the Houston Texans beat the New England Patriots?
You're going to keep plucking that chicken for like 5 years, aren't you?
At least for the rest of this year.
Fair enough.
So like, yeah, so those are like my previous thoughts and feelings. I thought I was going to be full forever and satiated. And then this game happened on Sunday between the Texans and Titans. And I never wanted it to end. I'm upset that I have to die one day now. I want to live forever. And it's a shame we have to live through other things, because this was my favorite game in the history of the Texans-Titans matchup. What's been your favorite Texans-Titans game since this has been a different version of the same franchise? Or a new franchise in the same city base, kind of, I don't know how to say it.
Well, I mean, there are a couple of them stick out for me because, you know, anybody who knows me, has followed me, knows that I absolutely hate the Adams family with a passion. But Adams is rotting in hell, and I'm thoroughly happy about that. The whole family is trash. I mean, when Bud Adams, I remember as a kid being like 8 years old, and Bud Adams would try to steal like Bum Phillips' thunder, and the entire crowd would just boo him mercilessly, as he deserved. You know, the dude's always been trash and was always trash, and then he died, and that's great for everybody. So my favorite games are the blowouts. And then there's the Andre Johnson Cortland Inigan game where Andre Johnson beat the F out of him.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, if I hated the Tennessee Titans and Bud Adams, I feel the same way. But I feel zero, like, I don't have any hate all for the Titans. Like we talked about before, like, the Oilers don't bring, I have no feeling at all for the Oilers all whatsoever, you know? And so this is my favorite game. My favorite moment, though, for sure, was the Jeff Allen left tackle, 3 false starts, 4th and 19, then Tom Savage converts after that, and the Pineapple Man is going crazy, and everybody's going crazy, and this game is completely meaningless. And then after converting a 4th and 19 by throwing the ball to Steven Anderson for 23 yards, Tom Savage goes on throw interception in the end zone immediately afterwards. And then there's still like 3 minutes left in that game, and Derrick Henry breaks a 76-yard touchdown run and like runs right past, I think he ran past Clowney on it, that's how I imagine it, and scored to end that one too.
I think it's a great game to harken back to, Matt.
Yeah, that's the best moment. But I think this is the best game between these two teams, just because like they're both playing good football. The Texans can play bad football every once in a while, but you know, typically they're playing, you know, competent football. And the Titans have gone from like being mediocre at everything to being really great at throwing play action passes. And a lot of things that we clamor about on the side, on the show, whenever I write, is throwing the ball downfield is really good. Play action is really good. Establishing the run is a myth told to you by those trying to numb and control you. And the Titans have really kind of gone away from that with Marcus Mariota lineup and Ryan Tannehill's their starting quarterback, where they throw the ball downfield to set up, you know, the run. They're really great in the intermediate sections of the field. They run play action on any down and distance. Like, they ran play action on 1st and 15. I almost cried. I was so happy that, you know, they're doing things like that. And so, like, for Tennessee to be playing very well and Houston to be playing well, and both teams like kind of be playing for kind of sort of AFC style championship, and then also just be like a really good game for even past that setup too. I think this was the best game in the series because of that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as far as like, you know, the competitive nature and then what the stakes that were riding on this game, I'd have to agree. This is a huge game, and you know, Matt, we've seen a lot of really stupid football this year. we've seen a lot of really boring football this year. We have for the past couple of years. We get to watch Bill O'Brien
the last
run
6 years.
Carlos Hyde up. Run Carlos Hyde up the middle for, you know, 8 of the first 9 drive type things. We've seen a lot of poor football, but this was actually a genuinely interesting, exciting game on Sunday.
Yeah, and that's kind of like a lot of it too. Like, just because the Texans win doesn't necessarily make it a good football game. You know, like, it's good if you're a Texans fan, you feel good and they win games. But as far as the quality of play, like the Texans game against Jacksonville in London, that wasn't a good game, for example. The Texans against the Colts on Thursday Night Football weren't good games. You know, Houston won, and, you know, that was great and everything. But, like, the game itself and the performance on the field from their team wasn't good. And this, I think, was the opposite of it. Like, both teams had different things going well for them that worked, and it led to Houston, you know, winning 24-21. And there's a variety of things I really enjoyed about it. So the first question we have from our listeners slash readers slash viewers slash number one fans is from at your mom, which is YURRMALM, which I guess is
terrible.
Like, it's your mom, I guess, is what it is. Very right. Clever, very good. How much better would this offense be if we saw the greatest tight end ever grace NRG Stadium, Steven Anderson?
I just, that whole, when I saw that question on the script, I was just like, oh my God. You know, here's the thing. Because it's, you know, it's the Texans, and you know, we have a fan base that can be somewhat irrational most of the time. But we've gone through like a series of tight ends since Owen Daniels, where like this guy's going to be the James Casey is. Yeah, James Casey's rookie year was going to be like simultaneously the long snapper, the fullback, the tight end, the strong safety, the place kicker. I mean, they had like 18 different positions for this cat to play the first year. It's like, what? Like tight ends, like one of the hardest positions to learn your rookie year, and he's going to play all the positions.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, Steven Anderson was one of them. Yes, he was fast, but he was small, can block. And I don't know. I've always kind of enjoyed, you know, Steven Anderson, you know, he kind of is what he is. He was just an undersized guy who had some good wheels, but, you know, he hasn't been able to stick around anywhere.
Yeah, like, anyway. They use him in the slot some, too, but he never could really, like, use his body against slot corners even, you know. And he went to New England for a spell as well. Like, he was fun in training camp. He would always catch a couple of touchdowns, that sort of thing. But yeah, as like an overall NFL football player, he wasn't the best, but at six, yeah, he was a 6'2" tight end, and he looked bigger in pads, you know. But yeah, you're saying like he was kind of a smaller tight end. He couldn't block at all, but he could line up in the slot, and he was like Tom Savage's number two weapon in 2017, which is such a disastrous statement because Will Fuller was hurt for the majority of that year.
Right. Yep.
So I want to talk about the defense first, mainly because whenever it comes to safeties, it's hard to like fully understand what they do on the field, mainly because they play off the television screen. And like Tayshaun Gibson was playing single high for the majority of this game, and you don't see him out there because you can't see him. He's off your television screen unless the ball goes downfield. And so, like, you know, Romeo Crennel played him back there, lost single high just to help limit the downfield passing game while play action, that sort of thing. Romeo Crennel was going to let Tennessee have a shot like down the deep middle part of the field, like Tennessee ran against Kansas City and against Oakland earlier this year. But I don't want to talk about Tayshaun Gibson. I want to talk about Justin Reed. He's unbelievable. He's one of the best players on this team, and he's quickly becoming one of the best safeties in this league. I know we talked about him as well last week, but he did make the play in this game. And the play of the game was he was lined up as the outside cornerback against tight end Anthony Firkser. The Titans ran a slap flat combination. Firkser catches a slant, turns up to, you know, try to score, and Justin Reed puts his entire shoulder on the football. And I watched it in slow motion, and like the grimace you can see on Firkser's face is unbearable. You're like, yeah, football is a really effed up game. It's terrible. I don't know how I ever played it, you ever played it, or how anybody ever plays it at all. And that popped the ball out, and Winnie Merciless is standing right there with absolutely nothing to do, and then takes the ball all the way back down to Tennessee's red zone. And that was a 14-point swing, pretty much. It changed like the entire complexity of the game as well, too. And then also in addition to that, Justin Reed tackled Deion Lewis to the goal line to save a touchdown. He touched down Jonnu Smith to save a touchdown. He defensed a pass in coverage, I guess, I believe against Anthony Firkser as well, too, on third down. He recovered the onside kick. So is he the type of player you can build an entire defense around?
I don't know about entire. I mean, safety is an important position, but I still think that the most important two things that you do defensively are get to the quarterback and play cornerback. And he doesn't do either of those. But if you're talking to somebody who is playing at an extremely high level, who can do everything that you want a good, genuinely good safety to do, I think he's getting there. And when you consider this is his second season, he's still got a lot to learn. He is a real joy to watch. I mean, it seems like every play he's coming off the field hurt because he puts everything he has into every freaking play out there.
And it does seem like his shoulder's mangled and is barely hanging on. It's like a loose tooth, you know. It's about to pop off if it's tied to the doorknob. What I really admire about Reed, too, is he does a little bit of everything. He can be the cleanup, you know, janitor in the run game. He can play man coverage against guys. And he may be Houston's best cover guy, too. I mean, sure, he's not covering A.J. Brown one versus one, but whenever teams try to throw at him, he's usually making plays on the ball and, you know, stopping, you know, quick out routes to Ferkser like he did this game, too. And I mean, he just really does a little bit of everything. He's been monumental to every single game the Texans have played this year. And without him, I don't know where they'd be. You know, like we saw the game with Jahlil Adai, and it didn't go all that well. We saw Mike Adams out there earlier, too. And the difference between Reed and, you know, them is astronomical. It's the difference between, it's not necessarily, but it's like, it's similar to the difference between J.J. Watt, like Charles Omenihu out there on the defensive line. There's an enormous difference between him and, you know, replacement level players.
I think just the one play where he ran down Jonnu Smith on that tight end screen. I mean, we don't have another guy, safety on this team, who has that sort of long speed, and he was able to do that. I mean, you just take the individual plays. Like, he's not letting guys pass to him. He's playing the ball. He's playing well against the pass. He's doing it all. And, you know, I just took a look because I had to. PFF gave him, like, a 58 grade on the game. And all I can say is if you watch that game.
A 58?
A 58. Brennan Scarlett, 4,063. So, you know, I'm not sure which one's right and which one's wrong with that one, but I don't even understand if you're going to give him that sort of grade with everything that he did out there. I mean, great, give him a 58, but I tell you what, give me Justin Reed over guys who creates turnovers and who runs guys down from behind and extinguishes everything that comes his way. He was like 1 for 3 throwing against.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give me a break.
Yeah, no, it's that's hilarious. Well, I mean, I bet Merciless has like a 91 because he caught the interception, you know?
Yeah, I had it up. The defensive grades they gave us are terrible. Brennan Scarlett's number one.
Everything, like all their grades are terrible. And what they do well and like what anything else does well, it's like the basic charting stats that you get. But now you can get those numbers from Pro Football Reference, or you can pay Young Football Outsiders $40 or whatever and get them the same week too. But the grades are bad. I also saw Gary Conley's the 20th ranked cornerback since, you know, being traded to Houston. It's like, yeah, sure, just forget all the plays where he's beating coverage and comes back and plays the ball and, you know, throws another life safety vest on. And playing competent coverage is overrided by doing that New England Patriots thing where you play the ball well. So all that being said, the Titans did score 21 points this game. They did have the red zone turnover. Angelo Blackson blocked a kick. Lonnie Johnson Jr. blocked a punt as well, too. They had almost 200 yards of offense in the first half, but scored 0 points. And they moved the ball very well this game against Houston, too. And so even though it was a 24-21 point game, you know, Tennessee probably could have scored 31 points, maybe, you know, 35 or 38 if that red zone drive didn't have a two and a half minutes or so taken off of it as well. But they moved the ball pretty well against Houston's defense. But I do think there was a few positives to take away from the Texans' defense this game. The first thing I saw was the defensive line, I think, played very well. I know DJ Reader's talked of as a nose tackle. He really isn't a nose tackle at all anymore since J.J. Watt's been down. They pretty much moved him entirely to the 3-4 defensive end position, where he can, you know, move around the line of scrimmage a little bit more. He can get more one versus one blocks. He can, you know, scramble around, make more tackles too. But it's been Blackson, Dunn, and Reeder on the first level. And they had a really good game just being like heavy on the first level. They weren't moved around very much. And it gave Zach Cunningham plenty of space to be able to maneuver around and make free tackles. He was brutal this game. Like, some of these hits and some ways taking on blocks right now is unbelievable. He had 10 solo tackles this game and four like shared tackles, so 14 total. And Derrick Henry has averaged 6.04 yards a carry with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback. He averaged 4.06 yards a carry on 21 carries, and he had a long of 21 this game too. So did you see a lot from the defensive line this game? What do they do to be able to stop, or not necessarily stop Henry, but be able to limit him this game?
I don't even know what to say differently from you. I mean, it was the fact that Reader, I mean, let's even give him credit where it's due, the $12 million man, Angelo Blackson, played well in the middle. You had even Carlos Watkins had a good game. They were dead set on making sure Derrick Henry was not going to beat him, which is why Carlos Watkins got 31 snaps. So they had a game plan. They're going to stop him. They're going to make Tannehill throw. I thought, you know, as much smack as Romeo Crennel has taken this year, you look at a game like this, and he had a perfect game plan for the BSFs. Is he stopped the run? He made Tannehill try to beat them, and he had that safety, one safety high, which was, you know, taken away what they were really being successful at previously. I thought it was a great game plan, and I think that the defensive line helped execute it. And then Zach Cunningham was a machine. I mean, he was just a machine on Sunday.
Yeah, and he's just, like, super violent, too, with the way he plays. The front seven play of this game is brutal. The one thing that the Titans did have success, though, were, like, the outside zone plays where, like, Roger Saffold was really bad to start the season there, but that was with that long-haired backup left tackle play next to him. I'm trying to name his name, but I'm blanking. He came in as a sixth offensive lineman. Like, he's a competent left tackle, but he's not Taylor Lewan. And I know Lewan gets made fun of a lot for crying on the bus and all the penalties that he takes. And I know he's been, like, super over-aggressive and, you know, done some, like, really nasty things that shouldn't be in our league, you know. I love whenever, like, riders and stuff say that. That doesn't belong in our league. But with Lewan back in the run game, that's one of the things I think he's very underrated at, is he's a really great run blocker. And he's the type of run blocker you typically don't see at the left tackle position. But him and Roger Saffold have been excellent together. And they had, you know, three or four really good runs against the left side where they each of them made their blocks. They climbed the second level well. That Derrick Henry run for 21 yards, that was, you know, that was outside zone, so the weak side with the fullback pulling. And that was a really great play. They got him to the, you know, 1 yard line or whatever. It took him four more plays after that to score. But, I mean, other than those, like, kind of big runs on the outside, Derrick Henry didn't have, you know, much space to do. The hamstring injury limited him, too. But, you know, 4.06 yards of carry, including a long of 21. You subtract that, you know, that drops down fairly significantly. I was impressed and kind of surprised by, you know, how good the run defense was this game, considering how well Tennessee had been on the ground this year with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback.
Yeah, and actually, I was surprised. I thought if there was one team that was going to be really successful running the ball against us, it was going to be them because of their blocking. But, man, we gave no quarter. It was DJ Reader, Watkins, and Blackson and Dunn shutting down the middle. And I think that they tried to focus too much on going into the middle gaps rather than going on the outside zone. Like you said, I mean, like, that's what Derrick Henry's style is. I get it. But you're running right into the meat of our best defenders when you do that.
Yeah, and Henry's been a great outside zone runner this entire year, too. Like, the cutbacks and stuff he's making have been extraordinary, especially that Kansas City run he had. And, you know, I guess he's one of the five best running backs in football, and they've been using him as a pass catcher a lot more this year, too. And he's been very impressive. Another kind of funny stat, you know, going back to you don't establish the run, you throw to run, comparing Henry with Tannehill to Mariota. So he was averaging 6.04 yards a carry, like I mentioned with Tannehill, 3.68 with Mariota. But their cumulative rush offense DVOA, this is like a per play, like this is their run offense DVOA with Tannehill versus with Mariota. This is just cumulative. But their cumulative run offense DVOA Tannehill, 73.5% with Mariota, -109.8%. And they had yet to have a negative run offense DVOA since they made the switch to Tannehill. And it's another like really great bullet point to just keep establishing the fact that you don't establish the run. It's a lie told to you by, you know, those who are trying to lie and control you and manipulate you.
Exactly. Don't believe the lies.
The other big run play they have is the John Smith toss play. And that was a cool play because you have, on that play, you had, I believe, Tajay Sharp blocking Jacob Martin. And like Tajay Sharp just abused Martin in the ground game on that run play specifically. You have Jack Conklin against Gary and Conley. And then you had another guy on Justin. I think it was Jack Conklin and Justin Reed. And then you had the other tight end. I think you had, this is what you had. You had Ferkser on Gary and Conley. You had Tajay Sharp on Jacob Martin. And you had Conklin on Justin Reed to create, you know, three mismatches on that entire play to spring Jonnu Smith. And that was a 53-yard carry that he had where he broke 20 miles per hour. I think that play is important just because of this idea of, you have Jacob Martin, him getting more snaps, more playing time. Because 14 snaps the previous week was too little. But if you're running the ball, you can't do anything at all whatsoever. And watching Tajae Sharpe just completely maul him and, you know, chew him up and spit him out in that play was very disheartening as being like a member of the Jacob Martin fan club.
Well, I mean, one thing Jacob Martin's not going to do is he's not going to hold up against the run. You know, he's 225 pounds. He's not big. He's quick. And he had a terrible game. They were completely ready for his speed rushes all game. I don't think he even had a pressure. but, you know, he's not going to say it. But that the Jonnu Smith play was a piece of art. And I tell you what, I've never seen a tight end like that fast. And I also want to say that I remember Rich Caster when he played for the Oilers, the guy who had the previous 50-yard-plus run. So I thought that was kind of cool. He was an Oiler. He played with Mike Barber in the mid-70s and on those mid-70s, 76, 77 teams. So I thought that was kind of cool, too, that he was the last tight end to have a 50-yard run. Mm-hmm. So that was a beautiful play design. They matched us up to death. And that was a fun one. That was a fun play. Watch it. You know, guys you don't want to tackle, Jonnu Smith.
Put him on the list. And the Titans did run like a lot of fun plays too. I love that deep shot they took out of their own end zone to that was AJ Brown versus Jonathan Joseph out wide. I really like that screen pass they ran to Corey Davis too. The Ryan Tannehill and also that like entire goal line play, the reason why they weren't able to get that 1 yard was how much the ends were crashing on those run plays. You know, Merciless and Omnehu and everybody coming off the backside were just crashing on the interior and running upfield, and they pull their left guard around the left edge. They pull Saffold out to the edge, and then he makes a block, and you know, Tannehill's wide open to run from that point on. And that was a really great play call as well, too, to be able to take advantage of how much they were crashing on the exterior to the interior to sell out to stop those interior runs, too. But I think Arthur Smith is, you know, a good offensive coordinator. I think he's realized a lot of things that a lot of coordinators never actually realized, and he's done a very good job at, you know, changing this offense up entirely with, you know, Tannehill compared to what they were doing Mariota.
Yeah, and I think it's also having a lot more faith in what Tannehill can do. I mean, look, Tannehill was a good prospect. He was a, if I remember correctly, he was a first-round pick. I mean,
he was an eighth round pick.
Yeah, he wasn't a bad prospect coming out. It's just he went to Miami and nobody developed him. And so you give up on Mariota, and then you go back to somebody who has a record, who has a history of actually being able to push the ball downfield occasionally. But that's more than Marcus Mariota can say. And he, and, you know, Mariota also came out of Chip Kelly's system, so he was truly a system QB who could not adapt to the pros. So I appreciate what Arthur Smith has done. Definitely, he's kind of taken a page out of the. Oh my God. I can see his face. I can't think of his name. The Rams coach.
McVay.
Yeah, McVay. Where he, every play, a lot of the plays can look the same. So you have the same alignment, the same movement, but different things happen. And so you see a lot of that from Arthur Smith. And it's been an enjoyable offense to watch, which I, you know, I wasn't sure if I was ever going to say that about the BESFs, like ever.
Well, I did like the Malarkey thing just because it was exotic meth mouth, but they invested so much in their offensive line. And they did like a lot of cool running scheme sort of things to make it work out all right and have like a mediocre offense, you know, with Mariota. And it's also just football is better when there's a lot of different teams doing a lot of different things and nobody was playing like Tennessee was at that time. So I will say I enjoy watching Malarkey. I didn't like watching LaFleur at all because LaFleur was like captain of the first down run, second down run, run on second and 12, run on first and 10, run on second and 15, throw the ball on third and 7, you know, sort of thing. And They're really focused on being balanced in Green Bay as well, too. But yeah, I like the game plan that Smith calls. And, you know, again, like a lot of things that we clamor for, he does. And he's done a really good job there in Tennessee, too. Now, the other thing about this game, I think that was a lot different than last week against Denver when Drew Lock completed 20 of his 22 short passes for, you know, 203 yards and two touchdowns, where you could say like every single member of their secondary had a bad play last week from the cornerback position. And this week, you make the argument, I guess you can really just say, that every member of the second of the cornerback group had a good play this week. Burton and Hargreaves ran across the formation to stop a third and short pass to A.J. Brown. Gary and Conley deflected a pass on third down two. Lonnie Johnson Jr. deflected a fake punt. And the Texans lost the Titans last year because of fake punt, of course, and lots of free blitzers from DMPs as well. Jonathan Joseph almost picked off a pass sitting in zone coverage. I don't think Bradley Roby had a very good game. He had a bad game last week against Denver as well, too. But, like, you know, it's hard to cover somebody when they have 7 seconds to throw the ball sometimes. And A.J. Brown's a very good wide receiver. And so, unlike last week, like, the cornerbacks actually made plays. And I know there's a lot of complaining about Romeo Crennel's game plan last week. And this week, I really don't think you... I think they didn't do anything that much different than they did the week before. I just think the cornerbacks actually made plays this time and were actually, like, competent, unlike last week when they were... You know, absolutely wretched and horrible, especially against the play action passing game.
Yeah, I think it was just against the play action they had a lot more success. You know, which I gotta say, it kind of tells me, you know, I'm not sure how sustainable that is week to week. You know, we're great 1 week and we can't do anything the next, and you know, we weren't even getting close to Tannehill for most of the time, and it was a weird game that way. I do want to talk about just quickly about that fake punt and how freaking stupid it was. I was kind of a segue for you, but you didn't take it. Anyway, I thought it was really stupid. Either go for it on 4th and 10. Don't put your punter out there to throw a pass on 4th and 10 if you're going to go for it. You know, go for it or don't.
Mm-hmm.
Shiza or get off the pot.
Well, and they've run that play before and it worked. Like, Kern's actually a pretty good quarterback back there. The one really dumb play they had, though, was the fake field goal. That I think they lost against Carolina because of it, where the kicker was just absolutely murdered. I try to run a fake. It's the same argument, too. You're like, it's 4th and 5. Let your best players go out and get in instead of your place kicker, you know?
I just, you know, everybody knew they were going to, they're going to go for it. And it looked like a fake from the beginning. You got to put the guy in motion. It yelled fake the entire time. We were completely ready for it. It was just very stupid. They should have called a timeout and said, look, let's just put the offense out there and do this.
Mm-hmm. And luckily for them, Houston didn't score before after that point as well, too. And their drive kind of petered out at the end of that one. But so the Texans' play-action defense, they were, entering this game, they were 7th in, I guess teams have only run play-action some 20% of the time, which was the 7th least amount of football. They're allowing only 7.2 yards per play against play-action, which was the 8th best per play defense, too. But on non-play-action passing plays, they were 30th with 7.2 yards of play. So, like, their play-action defense has been just as good as their non-play-action defense, which is very rare because typically teams do a lot better in play-action than without it. And I do think the play-action defense was better this week. I think just by playing single high, I think that made it a lot better. But also, they played a lot of zone, too, and they also did a good job switching things off from, you know, zone to man. They played a lot of press off man, too, that I think worked out very well. And one of the things I think was very important was that Ryan Tannehill this year on throws between 10 through 20 yards through the air, he was 36 of 41 for 670 yards and 5 touchdowns to 1 interception. And that's absurd, you know, throws between 10 and 20 yards like that. This week against Houston, he was 7 of 13 for 104 yards, 0 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. And I think the Texans did a really good job, like, taking away those throws from, you know, 10 to 23 yards through the air. They kept one guy deep. Tannehill only completed one pass over 20 yards, that pass to A.J. Green. And they made him throw things a lot more shorter than he wanted to, because Tannehill has really thrived from that 10 to 20-yard window. And I think just by flooding the zone, playing off-man, they took away a lot of those throws from him too.
Yeah, and that was the most shocking thing about that game was that, you know, we did a great job disguising coverages too. And I don't know what else to say. I was very, very shocked at the play by the secondary. Like, we were doing everything well. Everybody pitched in. It was a very odd game that way, because with that secondary, with those guys, I mean, Conley, Hargraves, I mean, these aren't superstars. These have been pretty terrible players, even this year at times. And they did everything well, it seemed like, on Sunday. One thing that really stuck out to me is that when there weren't a lot of guys that were wide open against Denver, there were guys that were just wide open, just had nobody close to them. And that seemed to really get taken care of on Sunday.
Yeah. No, it was entirely different. The defense looked entirely different from the secondary perspective. The one bad thing about the secondary was that AJ Brown was uncoverable. He caught Avis 13 targets for 114 yards and 1 touchdown. Is he just better than everybody in Houston's secondary? What'd you make of his game on Sunday?
I thought he had a great game, but, you know, when in retrospect, as I was kind of thinking and contemplating the game later Sunday night, why didn't they go to him a heck of a lot more? I mean, why they did, but look, when you look at the stat line and you see that Derrick Henry got the ball 21 times, you see a Deion Lewis rush 3 times, it seemed like there was a real opportunity there to go to AJ Brown and do a lot more damage. I get it. 8 for 13. Great. Corey Davis had 6 targets and 3 receptions. It seemed like they were really, even with the lack of success running the ball early, they were really dead set on continuing to do it. And I think that ultimately that hurt them, that they stopped pushing the ball down the field, it seemed like, after that A.J. Brown first 60-yard catch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they could have done more things like run, you know, I mean, I hate the Yankee concept thing where you run the 2 deep crossers, but mm-hmm. just making that 1 deep safety, make Tayshaun Gibson make a decision and then throw off him from there. Tannehill really hasn't thrown that many passes down the deep sideline. A lot of his stuff has been down the deep middle, and maybe he's just uncomfortable making those throws down the sideline. And with Gibson sitting there, you're kind of taking away that one throw for him. But yeah, I mean, that's a great point. Like, Brown having 13 targets still seems low. It's kind of like whenever we talk about DeAndre Hopkins and we're like, yeah, nobody can cover him. There's no limit to the number of throws you can throw to him. He could have 20, he should have 25 targets this game. Just keep giving him the ball because nobody can guard him at all. And it felt like Brown reached that level. And, you know, it's rare for a rookie wide receiver to reach that level too. And the other funny thing about watching him and Corey Davis is that Brown's obviously like the leader between the two. And it's kind of fun watching him as a guy who's, you know, 2 years younger, is a rookie, or who, you know, this is Davis's third year. This is Brown's rookie year. And he's like, you know, really trying to encourage him and get him going and get him excited as they're playing, because Brown's just like all out from the very beginning. And it's also hilarious how bad that Ole Miss quarterback was, having Metcalf and Brown the same team. And you're like, I watched all that Greg Little video last year, and that was like, I thought Little was fine. I had him at, I think it's like the fourth, you know, tackle or whatever, or fifth tackle I had in the group. So I'm right behind Cody Ford. And the biggest thing I took away was even Little's play was how bad that quarterback was. And it's been kind of fun to watch those two guys just be like very physical and big. And then also just a difference in how they're using them, where Brown's kind of more of a nuanced route runner, whereas Metcalf is just like, yeah, I'm going to run straight and nobody's going to catch me. I'm going to jump up and catch everything.
He just out physicals everybody. You mentioned one thing I wanted to hit at, and I completely forgot to talk about Tannehill, is that what you don't see from his kind of his quarterback route trees, you don't see those deep outs. You don't see those things on those throws on the sideline. And I think that Romeo Crennel saw that and really picked up on it. He took away the deep middle where they've been really successful. Again, people have been talking smack about Crennel all season. Some of it I think is justified, but then you look at a game like Sunday where he completely shut down Tannehill's strengths. I thought it was very Belichickian.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, his players are bad too. And it's like, I don't know what you want him to do. Like, you don't want Gary and Conley, you know, playing press man against AJ Brown consistently, or even against, you know, Khalif Raymond consistently. And so, I mean, there's a lot of just bad matchups that he has across the field. And I think he's done a spectacular job all season long. And I'll stand behind Crennel, you know, for all that specifically. Another point in that too is the pass rush is bad also. They had 2 sacks. One was Charles Omenihu, I'm getting it close to getting it right. After hearing Tony Romo say it wrong over and over again,
oh God, yeah,
I feel like
terrible.
I have to be better and say it right. But he bull rushes Nate Davis, and I liken him to that moth in the desert. And it's one, you know, niche thing that does is it pollinates the flower that the Joshua tree has, and that's the only thing it really does. It eats the flower of the Joshua tree, and it pollinates, and it's the only thing that does. And that's what I liken Omenihu as. He can bull rush as an interior pass rusher, and he can't do anything else at all. He's bad against the run. You don't want him as an outside edge rusher, but he can do this one thing. He beat Nate Davis and had a sack. The other sack was off of A.J. Moore blitz around the corner. He beat Deion Lewis, and Tannehill, you know, steps up the pocket and runs into Cunningham and McKinney on third down. And like that, those are the 2 sacks. And yeah, like they've had 6 quarterback hits, but Tannehill had forever to throw, and he holds on the ball for a while. And the one, I think the biggest knock on his performance so far this year has just been he takes some really bad sacks. He takes some nasty hits too. He's kind of like, even though he's fast, he doesn't move around the pocket well. Like, it's not like Brady where if there's pressure around, he can, you know, zip around some and get around it and deliver throws on, you know, deliver throws with pressure in his face. Tannehill's kind of stuck. He doesn't move around it nearly as well. And even then, you know, he said 6 quarterback hits, but Tannehill consistently had time forever to throw. And that touchdown pass to A.J. Brown against Bradley Roby is a really great example of that, where he had 7 seconds, 8 seconds against the 3-man rush to find Brown that touchdown pass. So, I don't know. The pass rush was bad. But what did you see Houston do to try and create pressure in this game? I know you mentioned that Jacob Martin had a bad game.
I think the one thing that really jumped out at me was what, God, you really celebrated that? Just, you know, the Saints are blowing out Indy. It's like 17-0 already. Is whenever Deion Lewis was in the backfield, they blitzed, especially on third downs. They forced Deion Lewis to be a blocker rather than letting him go out in pass coverage. There's one thing Zach Cunningham can't do. He can't cover well. I mean, he's just not very good at it. McKinney is not very good at it either. So that's a real big mismatch, and they weren't able to exploit that mismatch because they were forcing Lewis to stay in against the blitz. And I thought that was a great strategy by Grinnell in order to do, you know, take away. Again, he did a great job taking away the weapons. Took away Deion Lewis as a receiving back. He took away the middle deep. That's what I saw that they did. That was very successful. That was really the only time they were getting close because they sure as heck weren't creating pressure otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw some of that. They had that one sack against Lewis, and I think it's a great point too by keeping him in. Where they're not, I didn't feel like they created like a lot of like checkdowns for Tannehill either. And Lewis versus McKinney has historically been a really bad matchup for Houston too. Lewis has torched McKinney in the, you know, 16 AFC divisional round before and has beat him a couple of times. But the one thing I thought was kind of weird was they had Martin rush a lot with his hand down as a pass rusher, and they tried to loop him a lot, and that didn't work very well. Winnie Merciless against and Martin on each side against Luan Conklin didn't work at all either. But there's so many dropbacks where you just see both of them just push them right past the quarterback. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to take these edge rushes, and they just take them. And once their hands are on, they just shove them all the way right past them. And that's the problem with Martin as a player. It's that, you know, he's light, and if you get your hands on him, you know, just about any offensive tackle in the league can, you know, manhandle him around, ragdoll him some. And he has to, and like, he's kind of like a bolt of lightning where whenever his stuff works, it really works. But whenever it doesn't, he's not going to be the type of guy who's going to create constant pressure. I think he's a guy who can have, you know, 8 sacks in a season, but he's not going to have like 30 quarterback hits and 45 pressures at all or anything like that at all whatsoever. But and then the interior too, like, they didn't do very much at all either. Like Jake, you know, Reader had a good game on the ground, and the whole defensive line did too. But they weren't able to create very much from their bull rushes or anything else. And I think Ben Jones has become a much better pass blocker too since he was in Houston. I think he's a guy who's gotten like a lot more serious about his like shape and going to the gym and getting stronger and quicker because he's looked, you know, fat and slow for a lot of his time in Houston. But I think he's done a really good job improving his body. And he's been much better pass protector well. And just the entire interior really didn't get much going at all either in this game.
Right, yeah. And so one thing I wanted to mention about Jacob Martin is what I think they really did with him is they knew that his one speed was just to go outside. His one move is just to go outside with the chopping the hand and being able to rip to the outside.
And the
you
few.
Say that so much prettier than I do.
And the few.
I get jealous.
Yeah, but the few. Yeah, go chop, rip.
Thank you. Thank you. So that's what, you know, they took that away. And what they did is they put somebody out there that he had to go around. So they put a tight end to his side. They'd motion the tight end over to his side. And the tight end would make him force him to go a little bit farther out. And by then, the right tackle has already adjusted his entire game to, okay, I'm just going to get between you and the quarterback and I'm going to swallow you. Mm-hmm. And I think they did that very successfully. And that's how they took him away. They just mm-hmm. made him go even farther out than just the right tackle, put a tight end out there.
Yeah, that's a great point. And like Martin he's used the inside move once before. He did against New Orleans where he created that pressure on, you know, their last game winning drive attempt, you know, and they kicked that 75 million yard field goal. But other than that though, I really haven't seen the inside move at all from Martin whatsoever. But yeah, I mean the pass rush is bad and you kind of look at the rest of the season and it's gonna be important for them to do more as a pass rush. And really, the only team I can see them getting much of a pass rush against is against Buffalo if they play them, because you can get more against Cody Ford, and Ford's been slow all season as a pass protector. This week against Tampa Bay, they don't have very many good pass rushing matchups. And then if they do play, you know, Baltimore or New England potentially, Baltimore, there's no pass rushing matchups for them. And then New England, you can get some stuff on the interior, and Martin can run against their slower offensive tackles too. But I don't see the pass rush really, you know, improving, and I don't see very many matchups for them the rest of this way out. And so it's pretty much just me up to the secondary making plays and Crennel being, you know, a warlock and having a really great scheme at the same time.
We got nothing to add to that.
So offensively, you know, Deshaun Watson is Watson. He's, you know, spectacular, incredible, and beautiful. He just didn't have the volume in this game. He had 27 pass attempts, but he completed 19 of them for 243 yards. He averaged 9 yards an attempt, and he was sacked one time, which is like a really spectacular stat line, like super efficient and effective. Not a lot of incompletions, pushing the ball downfield, especially to DeAndre Hopkins off of play action on that, you know, last drive in particular. Like the two of the most important throws of the game were off of play action, where he's like throwing the ball the very last second, rolling against his throwing arm, planning, throwing his back foot, and Hopkins just being able to, and like leading Hopkins too, where he's able to trail away from the defensive back to make catches. And like, I mean, the ball placement on some of those throws was just, you know, it was absolutely magnificent.
Yeah. I'll talk about the negatives first. Is, you know, the one play by Kenny Vaccaro was just gorgeous. I mean, I don't know what you really do about that. They showed, I'm trying to remember, they showed man coverage, and it looked like Duke Johnson was going to be alone out there, and then Vaccaro was able to come down. He went to his zone, was able to play center field and get down there. And Kenny Vaccaro is fast. You know, he went to UT, he's fast. I watched him play, and not very many safeties can make that play. You know, Jahlil Adai is not going to make that play.
Mm-hmm.
And the other interception, you know, was questionable. I think Rivers put it best, where, you know, even if it wasn't tipped, it had to get through three guys to even get to the wide receiver and to his target. That was just a really poor decision. I think it would have, if it wouldn't have been tipped, it would have been picked off anyway. So, you know, one of them was good, one of them was bad, but otherwise, I love Deshaun Watson. My love for him is deep and true. And there's a lot of beauty in there, and I'm just glad he doesn't have a restraining order on me yet.
Yeah, it knows no bounds. I'm glad I played for the Texans as well, too. The Vaccaro interception, I think the other thing that was important about that was you have Duke Johnson. You know, it looks like, man, he has a linebacker across from him. And then Vaccaro also sets up in the box. And right before the snap, Watson's looking the other way, and he runs all the way back to, you know, the deep half. And he's sitting back there, and then he sees Johnson, but he doesn't, like, run over there to cover him. He stays in his spot, and then he waits until the ball is thrown and goes over there and makes that play. And, like, I don't think that's a bonehead decision by Watson at all. I think he just saw it late. He's coming off the last, you know, read in his progression, and nothing's open on the right-hand side. And that clock starts going. He thinks, okay, I know I have Johnson. It's a linebacker. He's wide open over there. And I think he pressed Vaccaro. Vaccaro just made a really spectacular play. The other one was kind of weird, that because it's a slant off play action, and the Texans do that thing too, where they have so many plays where the receivers know where the ball is going before it's thrown, where they just stop and they're not running their routes because they know it's going to go this direction, and they waste a ton of routes, and I don't know why they do it like this, but they do. And that was one of those plays where it's like, that's the only throw there. It's play action through the slants of Will Fuller, and everybody climbs up, and I think Watson had a shot. I think he could probably put the ball over Rashawn Evans because Evans came up so far. But I think Simmons just made a really great play on that. And so I really didn't think that was that dumb of a decision. I think he just needed to throw like a loftier ball and not try to make it as streamlined as it was. And I mean, that play that Simmons made was really great too. And he's a really good athlete. And that guy's going to be a problem for everybody in the AFC South for the next, you know, 8-9 years or so too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I thought that was particularly boneheaded. I just don't even see how that would have ever been completed. I thought the interception was more difficult that it was tipped, because I think there was two guys that would have picked it off and had gone through.
I mean, I just think the loft on it, he just threw it too stream. He threw it too streamlined. But if you watch the replay, you see the play action. Everybody's coming up, and so he has the window. Fuller has like 6 yards behind the linebacker of space. And there's nobody behind him at all. And I just think he throws the ball a little bit too hard and a little too straight. And like a loftier throw, I think, could have gotten over that first level in it.
Okay, we'll agree to disagree on that one.
That's fine. It's okay to be wrong sometimes. And so
it is, Matt.
The other thing I liked on it.
God, we just went like Stephen Smith and God, who's that guy who I hate so much? I can't even think of his name. I just want to punch him in the face.
Max Kellerman. I like Stephen A, though. I will stand by Stephen A. He's such an entertainer. Like, he knows what he's doing. Like, this stuff is, you know, this stuff isn't easy to do, and the enthusiasm and the ability of him to turn everything into a circus, I think, is very extravagant, unbelievable. You know, like I can never do what Stephen A. does at all.
I could use my brain.
No, I mean, but it's just like the entertainment factor, you know.
Well, that's true. I mean,
guy who can play the instrument, but they have no stage presence. Like, there's something to being able to draw attention to yourself and being entertaining, and you know, like, and like creating, you know, conflict in a way at the same time.
Well, I thought, okay, so he did do something funny. He did that, the most annoying people in sports, and he named himself number one.
Yeah.
So that was.
He knows what he's doing too. He understands it's a get up, you know. He knows what he's doing. The weird thing about this game was like, actually wasn't weird. It was a typical Texans story passing game where the first half you're like, yeah, they have all these matchups available. The one thing they really took advantage of was having the Titans play a lot of single high this game. They play man covers, they played single high, and you see Kevin Byard in the center of the field, and then they would kind of they would move Kane Vaccaro around. Sometimes they play too deep, sometimes he covered the tight end, sometimes he play in the box, sometimes he blitz. They kind of use him a little bit different ways, and a lot of times they're bracketing DeAndre Hopkins or Will Fuller or whatever the wide receiver formation dictated it to be. And the one thing they did well in the first half was find Kenny Stills, where you have Kenny Stills beat Logan Ryan man coverage, where he has 6 yards of separation and cuts underneath him and takes off past him, and Ryan doesn't even get a hand on him at all. And the second touchdown was against Ty Smith, and Ty Smith stood no chance at all either. And these are just like one versus one man coverage throws, and Watson delivered some just, you know, really beautiful, high-rising, you know, touch passes to him.
Yeah, I really wonder, you know, again, my ever deep, unending love for Deshaun Watson is, what defense do you really play against him? Because it doesn't seem like man is really the best way to go against him for a couple reasons. Number one, you don't want guys to turn your back to Watson. And number two, Kenny Stills, Will Fuller, DeAndre Hopkins, these are guys going to beat you in man coverage. So it seems like man is really not the way to go against him. So I'm just throwing that out there. But you're also kind of screwed against them in zone play. So, but I think the last thing I would do if I was going to, and I hadn't really thought about this deeply, if I'm playing Deshaun Watson, I'm going to play zone. I'm going to keep everything bend, don't break kind of thing. I'm going to keep guys' faces to the quarterback so he doesn't scramble for 45 yards against me on a play. So the fact that they played so much man against us with kind of their talent and against our talent, to me, seemed like it was just kind of a failure. When we talked about this game last week, I talked about how I thought this was going to be a high scoring tennis match kind of game. And if you look at, as Big Matt corrected me in the hair of the dog thread, if you look at the final score, it's 24-21. That doesn't sound like a tennis match kind of football game, but there's 3 red zone turnovers. So theoretically, and then the blocked field goal. So theoretically, we're talking about a game that was actually like 38-34. That's wrong.
It sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds goodish. 38-31. So this was a high scoring game. We just had 3 red zone turnovers, a blocked field goal. So it was a high scoring game. It was a high scoring match in most ways that were important. So I just don't, what Tennessee tried to do to me just seems self-defeating, Big Matt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that part of it is strange. I guess like Watson, I think it's kind of like with the log quarterbacks, though, where whenever they're this good, you have to disguise things very well. You have to run a variety of different things. And unless you just have the cornerback talent who can say, like, yeah, we can put this guy on DeAndre Hopkins and not get scorched, and we can put this guy on Will Fuller and be okay, and I feel comfortable with this and that. And the Titans, cornerbacks are weird because they're competent. They're pretty good. I think Adoree Jackson's had a much better season this year, as long as he's not covering Tyreek Hill than he's had in previous years. And he didn't play this week, but like Tremaine Brock's been pretty good for them as far as just like, you know, you have Cheeto dust in your fingers, and you're playing Guitar Hero call-up. And they're like competent, though. They have good cornerbacks. It's not a disaster there. Their pass rush is just so bad, though. They have 1+ pass rusher in Harold Landry, and he has 9 sacks, but I feel like a lot of his sacks are kind of, you know, empty. There are a lot of like, you know, vulture sacks, that sort of thing. Jarrell Casey hasn't done much at all this year. He's hurt. He has a big knee brace on. And I'm also kind of sad too. He's wearing these big baggy shirts underneath his pads now, and so you don't even get to see any Jarrell Casey butt crack at all anymore. And then Jeffrey Simmons has been good, but he has 2 sacks and he's a bull rusher, and it's hard to, you know, create a lot of consistent pressure playing every down, bull rushing all the time too. And the Titans rushed 3 for the majority of this game. They did a lot of 3-man rushes and they also showed blitz a ton before the snap. They would line the, they have a guy in every gap, and the ball snapped, and they drop everybody back. And you always have one guy spying, and like you mentioned in the thread too, They have three guys spying. Deshaun Watson still runs past them. And like, it was very perplexing because how did Dean Pease limit Deshaun Watson last season in week two? He did it by blitzing a ton, by blitzing through the B gap, and he's been great at creating those sorts of blitzes all season. And the Titans just really didn't do it all this game. They didn't create very many blitzes through the B gap. And the one problem Houston has had as far as an offensive line goes hasn't been the individual one versus one matchups. As long as it's not Chris Clark against, you know, Kamalea Correa, it's been picking up blitzes and passing rushers off and the confusion that they have whenever you have three guys against two guys or two guys against two guys on the same gap and different stunts and those sorts of things. And they just didn't really do it at all. They, like I said, they dropped eight in coverage a lot and it really didn't work. They didn't create enough negative plays. They didn't put enough pressure on Watson. And then even whenever they did, he was able to run past and run out of it.
When you have an offensive line that hasn't played a lot together, the worst thing you can possibly do is to rush three guys. Because then it's, you're just talking about three guys one-on-one blocking. There's no stunning going on. There's no tomfoolery at all, right? You're just straight up going to rush the quarterback with three guys. And once again, you're not exploiting what you should be exploiting against the Texans. You should be the fact that they haven't played together a lot. You should be doing a ton of stunning, just anything, or a ton of blitzing, disguising the blitzes and still bringing it. Look, rushing three guys and dropping three guys in the spy ain't going to do it, you know? And it was a really, for Dean Pease especially, I thought it was just a poor game plan.
Yeah, it was strange from him. And I thought they blitzed more. I was looking at the numbers on Pro Football Reference, and they have an advanced stats page now at Pro Football Reference. That's kind of fun.
That's so awesome.
But yeah, so you don't even need to pay for Pro Football Focus at all anymore and find out Justin Reed has a 58 player grade in a game where he was like the best player. Well, he was the second best player in the Texans defense. I would say Zach Cunningham was their best player. But they've only blitzed 24.4% this season, which has them sandwiched between Minnesota and Denver, two teams that really don't blitz all that often. And they're like 26th in blitz rate, which is kind of surprising. But I feel like I've seen them blitz more, and especially on third down too. And I don't know, the three-man rushes were very stupid. And like, you have a lot of matchups where it's two guys blocking Jeffrey Simmons, and Jeffrey Simmons, one versus one against Max Sharping, is an advantage for the Tennessee Titans. But when it's Nick Martin and Zach Fulton and Max Sharping blocking Jeffrey Simmons, it's entirely different. Harold Landry's not good enough to beat Laremy Tunsil at all. And then you end up with Corey Area or Nadrell Casey on the other side. And Corey had that one sack against Chris Clark, but overall, like, they just didn't create very much pressure. And I thought that whole thing was kind of confusing and perplexing.
Yeah. You got really never mind. Let's just move on.
So that
because it was, I'm so perplexed, I have no words.
Yeah. The last question I have for you about the offense is something I've been thinking about a lot, because the Texans entering this game with Will Fuller, they averaged 35 points a game with him in the lineup. Without him in the lineup, they averaged 15.2 points a game. And I'm also including that game, the first matchup against Indianapolis, where he came out after one play and had one catch and left after the first series. So, like, where do you stand on this? Do you think this is the case where Will Fuller is just such a dramatic, different presence where the Texans just struggle moving the ball without him? Or do you think the play calling just kind of turtles without him, where they go, hey, Will Fuller's not out here. We're going to have to score 24 points. We're not going to throw the ball deep downfield. We don't trust Kenny Stills one versus one enough to actually push it. We're afraid of Deshaun Watson throwing a deep interception, trying to push the ball when he shouldn't. Like, where do you stand on this? Do you think Will Fuller is just so like traumatic for a defense, or do you think this is more of a case where the play calling is just kind of stupid or Fuller's out of the lineup?
I think it's the latter. I really do. Because you could do a lot of things with Will Fuller with Kenny Stills. And it's all this, it's like Will Fuller is like the testosterone that Bill O'Brien needs to actually do something on offense. And it's just kind of crazy. You know, we've talked about it a lot. We've talked about it. Look, Kenny Stills is out there. He can do these same exact things. Do it. Do it, do it, do it. And we don't. We go super conservative. And again, we rushed. You've got the stats here. I'm just going to take your material. Carlos Hyde on first down, 16 for 68. 16 first downs rushing Carlos Hyde. Not even breaking trend against a game in a game that we need to win. That's utterly ridiculous. Look, I don't care if it's 4.25 yards per carry. That's average. Like, that's an average running back in the NFL. Great. He had a better game than Alfred Blue would have had. Congratulations. It's just like Will Fuller is the steroid shot that Bill O'Brien needs in order to do things downfield, and it's not necessary. It doesn't need to happen. And that's my take on it. I want to talk a little bit more about Will, Matt, so let's hear your take.
I mean, I completely agree with you. I think it's a play-calling thing because I think Stills is very, very good. I think he can do, like, what, 80%, 90% what Fuller does. And also in deep passes this year, he's caught eight of his 10 targets for, I think, 226 yards and two touchdowns on passes over 15 yards to the air. And so, like, this is a guy who's very good at that sort of aspect of the game. I think the bigger problem that they have in their Fuller's out is what happens to the third wide receiver position, because they're simply unable to, you know, coach or teach or actually utilize Kiki Cutie as the offensive player who is inactive in this game. But I think of it more of a offensive play calling problem than a Will Fuller is just so spectacular and remarkable sort of thing here too. So for this, we can establish the run, which is very important. And this is also a Twitter question from @McGeehan_Matt. Or I guess it's @McGeehan_
I can't be any more demonstrative over here, Matt. I just want to say, Kenny Stills. Guess Kenny Stills' 40 time at the NFL Combine.
4.36.
4.38. Will Fuller's.
4.38. 4.33. Close.
I mean, seriously, guys. Seriously. We're going to get that hung up over 0.05 on the 40 time between those two guys. They're both lighting it up. They're both, like, leaving. They're like cartoon characters when they run.
Yeah, and I'm also at the point, too, where, I mean, I'm not at the point, but if I wasn't a Texans fan, and, like, let's say I lived in Minnesota or something, and I was doing the same sort of thing I'm doing now, I wouldn't even watch this team unless Will Fuller was on the lineup. There's no point to. Like, the offense completely turtles. It sucks. It's stupid. It's run-heavy. It's even more run-heavy than was this game, and they limit themselves on purpose whenever he's out of the lineup, too. But this week, we can establish the run. And this was kind of sparked by @McGeehan_Matt. Or I guess it's @McGeehan_Matt. There we go. We got it. Have we established a run yet, or do you keep handing the ball off to high on every first down? Now, establishing the run isn't an actual attainable goal. It's like an idea. It's not necessarily a myth, but it's like what Faulkner said. Like, there's no perfect work of art, but it's the pursuit of it that keeps you going back to the keyboard every day. And so you can never fully establish the run. But it's the idea of being able to establish the run is what keeps you running the football every single first down. So the Texans as a whole, they ran the ball 19 times for 72 yards on first down. That's 3.79 yards a carry. That's a success rate of 36.8%. Carlos Hyde, 16 carries for 68 yards, 4.25 yards a carry. And then second and long, we'll call it second 7+, because that's after an unsuccessful first down play. Hyde was 6 of 24, 4 yards a carry. Watson's 3 of 13. 4.33 yards a carry. Now, I think it was surprising how well the Houston Texans ran the football on first down compared to previous weeks. I think it was surprising how well they ran the ball in general. It was successful, not a lot of, like, big runs at all. The two big runs came on Carlos Hyde turning an inside handoff into an outside handoff by cutting off wide, where the edge defenders just didn't set the edge at all and got collapsed too far inside trying to stop those inside rushing plays that Houston had success having. But it wasn't bad. It wasn't atrocious. It wasn't awful. It was, you know, fairly good. Is it worth Carlos Hyde, you know, making sure he has more than 100 rushing yards and he has 16 carries on first down? No. I mean, they ran the ball too often on first down and limit the offense some. And you have, if Watson throws the ball consistently enough against this team with this quarterback play and the pass defense problems they've had all season, you know, maybe they score, you know, like a for sure 35 or 38 points and win by, you know, 10 instead of 3 points and win by, you know, 13 instead of 3 points, but, you know, that's the life that we're stuck in right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, look at it this way. Carlos Hyde, 26, 104 for 4 yards per carry. That's a very average.
It's the most
NFL.
Carlos Hyde box score I've ever heard.
No, but it's, I'd argue that. But you look at Deshaun Watson, 19, 27 for 243 for 9 yards an attempt. Look, I know there's new math these days. But I did pretty well in my advanced math classes to know that 9 is greater than 4.
I had no idea. Wow.
Right? And wow. Neither does Bill O'Brien, clearly. So, you know, it's that's the one that kills me is look, I get it. I get you want ball control. Carlos Hyde doesn't fumble. And his long was 11 freaking yards.
Mm-hmm. I think he did it twice. He had two longs of 11.
And both, I think both were bounces outside. Yeah, the touchdown run. Yeah. So it just makes me want to barf. I mean, you have the best player, one of the top, I would say, five best offensive players in the NFL as your quarterback. Love you. Love you, baby. Love you. And then Carlos Hyde, who's been one of the worst running backs since he ever came into the league. But this is what we do, and that's what Bill O'Brien does. So when we vetch about, you know, Bill O'Brien, it's exactly the sort of scenario that we're talking about here. Is Deshaun Watson is great. He's fantastic. He's truly elite. And Carlos Hyde is still Alfred Blue 2.0.
Yeah, he's like the Windows XP version of Alfred Blue being like Windows 94. Yeah. Or like Alpha Blue's like maybe Abra, and then no, Alpha Blue is Centipede, and then like Carlos Hyde can be Metapod. That's how we can do it. But I think the one thing the run game,
my God, is that really a Pokemon reference?
Yeah,
Pokemon. Sorry.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Awesome. I think the one thing the run offense did well was they ran the ball to Max Sharping and Laremy Tunsil-Side a lot, where they're really good at double teaming the first level. They don't really even have to block the first level because they're able to move the first level. They don't have to really block the second level that often because they move the first level 6 yards. And then you have Chris Clark pulling, or Robert Johnson pulling, or Zach Fulton pulling. And it doesn't even matter if they even block their guy or not because that first double team has been so good, where Hyde like has 5 yards available to him and he falls forward and gets the utmost amount of it. And so I think that portion of it has been pretty good for it too. And that was like the best part of the rushing attack was that they went more to those sorts of double teams. And I think they've kind of gone away from that as well, too. We had one more listener question about the offense. It was from @TexIdea_Texas. He said, I'd love to see more seam routes by the Jordans. And yes, I'm obsessed with the time position. Also, I think Omenehu is showing some progress and be a good player if he can remember to see off the edge and run defense. And I think that's an important point because every time they throw the ball to the tight end, it's a flat route play action. That play hasn't worked since Baltimore. That play sucks. It's dead. It's stupid. And yeah, like against teams like New England, for example, who have really good cornerbacks, they're going to have to win the matchups with their like 3-7 pass receivers. And seam routes to the tight ends are going to be valuable against teams like that. Teams like Baltimore, too, have 3 really good cornerbacks or 4 really good cornerbacks in Baltimore's case. And I think Houston's going to have to rely, not necessarily rely on those guys, but use those guys in bigger and more important games, even though this was the most important game of the regular season so far. And they haven't really gone to it yet, and it's going to be interesting to see if they can do it whenever they're going to need to find those guys in more routes than just like, oh, here's the play-action fake. I'm reading this guy. Oh, wait, there's 2 guys there, and now he's going to tackle for 1 yard, and this play sucks, and it's stupid.
Yeah, it's kind of turned into – God, I don't even know how to say it nicely – it worked against those really crummy linebackers.
Yeah, like Kansas City and Oakland.
Yeah, and once again, props to you for really kind of finding that focus on that. And Jack, how much different would Jacksonville be with Telvin
Smith?
Smith? Yeah.
It'd be like if you put Cunningham as your playside linebacker, and then we're playing like, I don't know, not even Dylan Cole as your backside linebacker. Like, you move, like, Cole and Gillespie to your backside linebacker.
Right,
because
right.
All the, like, Najee Good's been atrocious. And it's also weird, like, everybody whose name Good is always bad at playing football. He's been bad. Quincy Williams has been bad, too. Austin Calitro is horrible. He got burned by Ryan Griffin.
Oh, God.
And Miles Jack has been terrible this year, too. His run fits have been awful. And they're, like, 30th in run defense DVOA this year.
Yeah. But anyway, but you can't, that play is gone. I mean, that Daniel, or the Fells little flat route, that's turned into Ryan Griffin last year kind of territory. It's time to stop it. It's dead. It's over. It's completely ineffective at this point. Now, when you say, okay, let's do the Jordans down the middle. Well, let's look at the snaps. Jordan Akins had 38 snaps and Jordan Thomas had 1.
Yeah, Thomas is gone again.
He's gone again.
I'm not like saying like it was there, but they're gonna have to use those guys more in like a more effective way, because I think with the amount of attention that guys who, because they're gonna be able to play some man coverage, like Baltimore can play some man coverage in Houston, New England can too, and so it's gonna be being linebackers with where you have some speed matchup advantage between, you know, him and like Tyus Bowser, for example. Like Akins versus Bowser is a matchup advantage that you could have. And right now they're not taking advantage of like having in-game reps for it for the future.
Yeah, and just for fun, who had the worst PFF score offensively for the Texans?
Chris Clark.
Oh, that's of course, that's always a great guess. It was Darren Fells. He had a couple of drops. He did nothing through the air. Anyway, I just thought that was...
I can't get over the Justin Reed thing. You said 58.3?
Yeah, that was stupid. So okay. Stupid.
All right, I can't wait to post that in like 5 minutes here.
You should.
So, playoffs.
Playoffs?
The Texans have kind of sort of wrapped up the AFC South Championship. They have to beat Tampa Bay this weekend, which I don't think is going to happen. I think Jameis is going to rain hell down on them. He's going to stumble drunk out of his boathouse, and he's going to rain hell down on them. And then Tennessee. So if they beat Tampa, they win the division. If Tennessee loses at home to New Orleans, they win the division. If Houston loses and Tennessee wins, we have a Week 17 AFC South Championship game. And if that happens, I'm going to go to Houston for it 100%. And then... the other thing is that even if Houston does win the division this week, they are one game behind Kansas City. Because they beat Kansas City, they have the head-to-head tiebreaker. And so the Texans could catch Kansas City because the Chiefs are playing the Bears this Sunday night, and they play the Los Angeles Chargers. And they're playing good football again now that Mahomes is healthy. And they've kind of like, they've reconfigured their defense on the fly a little bit too.
And they got Suggs today.
And they had Suggs. He's competent. You know, he's intelligent. And the Galactic Space Turtle has found a new home. So if Kansas City was to lose and Houston was to win, they could tie them. And the reason why this is important is because the Texans would then have the 4 seed instead of the... they would have the 3 seed instead of the 4 seed. And the difference between the two is the 3 seed gets you Pittsburgh or Tennessee, maybe. Who knows what happens there. And then it gets you New England. The 4 seed will get you Buffalo, and then it will get you Baltimore. And so, like, yeah, it's a much better path. Like, Houston playing Pittsburgh, then playing New England could set up Houston maybe making it to an AFC South Championship game for the first time. Houston playing Buffalo, who has a defense that I think would match up very well against Houston, and then playing Baltimore in the second round, which I think would be absolutely, you know, murder again. That's a big difference between the two. So, like, let's say Houston even wins next week. Week 17 against the Titans is still going to be important. The last 2 weeks of the season are important, too, as far as a playoff perspective goes.
Yes, and I think Rivers had it on his Twitter timeline. I think it's 1% chance we get the 3.
I mean, I don't know. I could see it being greater than that, but that seems very low. Because they're only one game back, you know.
Well, right now on Football Outsiders, it's got us at 0.1% to get the bye.
Yeah, that's different. The bye is out of there, but...
oh, there it is.
They have a better chance of getting the 3, though.
12.7% to get the 3.
That makes more sense. Even though it feels like it should be a little bit higher. But again, like, all of their stuff goes into DVOA as well. And Houston's DVOA is bad because they have some really, you know, just like pant-sharding performances, you know, at the Mexican buffet. But, so yeah, that's where they're set up entering this weekend against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So our next question is from @Hedy_Hassan. I don't know how to say it, but Eddie's great. We like Eddie here. As a fan of this consistently inconsistent team with their playoff odds high and likely a 4 seed, is a wild card loss deemed a bad year? Or has this team regardless shown that with the right focus and coaching, they can take the next step as early as next year?
We're playing for this year. I mean, that's one thing I don't think people really understand is we are 100% in it for this year.
I think the next 2 years.
Yeah, maybe next year.
I said the next 2 years. I give the next 2. But then after the next 2, that's when you're like, I have no idea what they're going to do. Because I don't think Watson's going to extend until after next season. And they have like, we'll have like $85 million in cap space. And they'll just sign Will Fuller. And, you know, and they'll have to decide. Well, I guess this is Tunsil's last year of his rookie contract, so they have to extend Tunsil and that whole sort of thing. But I think they're in it for 2 years, though.
So let's say 2 years. Yeah. But it's going to be really... Yeah. So let's say we're in it for the next 1 or 2 years. I still think ultimately, because of the defense, we're in a lot of trouble. I think that you're going to see teams like Winston can rain hell down upon us.
Godwin may not play is the only thing that hurts their chances, but
who?
Chris Godwin may not play.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. But even like Justin Watson may be hard for them to cover. Right. He's like 6'3", 250 or whatever it is.
So it's, you know, we have a lot of weaknesses on this team. Smart coaching can beat us, as we saw with the Ravens, as we saw, God, dog it, the other team I'm looking for. And we got lucky that the Colts, you know, didn't butcher us. You know, that Colts offensive game plan against us was terrible. So we have a lot of weaknesses. A lot of teams do. But when you look at the Ravens, you look at the 49ers, a lot of teams don't have these deep weaknesses that we do. So I think that we have a chance to maybe win a game. But I tell you what, if you're going all in, and again, I think we're really going all in, and then with next year, then we have to, if we don't advance at least to the championship game, I think it's a failure.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think they for sure have the talent to get to be a AFC championship game, you know, sort of team, but it's just like everything else that kind of brings them down consistently. But a wild card loss, yeah, this would be a terrible season. They lose in the wild card round. The divisional round, they lose to Baltimore, I can understand it. And they lose to New England, I can understand that. That's understandable. But if they lose to Buffalo in the first round, they lose to Pittsburgh in the first round, that's unbelievable. And to trade the draft capital they traded for that to happen is, you know, I would say a fireable offense, but there's no such thing as a fireable offense with Bill O'Brien because he controls everything there. And again, even like going into next year, I think this will be a better team next year again because Watson has, you know, jumped to be like a top five quarterback this year. They'll have a lot of cap space and they'll have a different general manager, so they'll probably be aggressive from the very beginning next year too. They have their second round draft pick next year. So I think they'll be more aggressive next year. It's going to be a better football team next year as well. But yeah, like a wild card loss would be very bad and devastating. His other question is, how will you feel when Josh Allen visits NRG during wild card weekend? I'm so pissed off about this. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I don't know.
You're going to get a 50-50 jersey.
I know. I keep saying that, but like, I don't know. It's going to be so hard for me. But at least it's going to be one of those things where like, oh, well, I'm going to be happy regardless, but I'll feel so bad for Josh Allen, though, if he loses to Houston. He's the best. But
he's such a bad quarterback.
But he's like, he just does things that nobody else can do and has ever done at all. You know, and it's kind of that Mahomes thing in college. You're like, yeah, like all this stuff doesn't make any sense. But like nobody does this at all. And you kind of like lose sight of the talent. Because again, he's also 21 years old, 22 years old. You know, and quarterbacks don't peak until they're 31. Allen's remarkable though, and it's gonna be hard, but yeah, I don't know, it's gonna be very difficult for me. I don't even think about it.
His accuracy is so bad.
Downfield is bad. His short accuracy is good, his intermediate accuracy is okay, it's the downfield accuracy that's bad. It's a big difference.
That's what makes good quarterbacks.
That's not entirely true. Because he also has such great athleticism that it's okay. You know, he has other things that he's good at that can make up for his deep field accuracy or inaccuracy in this case.
Well, one thing that's better, that's notably better, is his mechanics are better. And so, you know, it's easy to see that. The one thing that really caught me in college is watching that elbow drop. And he did it a couple times. Was it last night? Yeah, last night. He did it a couple times, several times last night, where he's letting that elbow drop and so the ball was sailing on him. So if somebody could teach him to get that elbow up and let him come down with it, I think he's going to be in much better shape. But his mechanics are better. He's making better decisions. He's not coming over the top of the ball, drop the elbow, come over the top of the ball, and it doesn't go anywhere. He's not doing that as much. So,
and he's a baby. He's a baby, too.
I can't believe he's as good as he is. I really cannot.
Yeah, he's a baby. I'm just trying to enjoy him before Brett unleashes Josh Allen all over NFL Reddit and just ruins the internet completely.
Right.
The worst website in the world is by far NFL Reddit. Just like jokes that aren't funny, terrible analysis that goes nowhere. I'll go in there to watch highlights. I'm like, this is just unbearable. But, and of course on my phone, whenever I'm taking a cigarette break at work, The last question we have here is from At the Book of Kenny. As you know, him from our website itself. He asked, if we get the Texans that defeat the Kansas City Chiefs and New England Patriots in the playoffs, how far do you think they can go in the playoffs? And, I mean, like, this is a team that can that fluctuates wildly. I think the Chiefs game was really fluky and very strange. I think Mahomes was hurt. I think their team is better now than it was. Like, Mahomes is back to being, like, an unbelievable quarterback again. I think if you play that game again, Houston wouldn't win how they won that game. I think New England's going to get better as well, too. I think they'll be better prepared as well for, like, the coverages that Houston uses. And also, like, defensively, too. And that Bradley Roby interception changed the entirety of the game. And New England never got a break like that in that game, too. So, I don't know. Like, it could happen. I think Houston could beat New England, but I wouldn't expect them to beat Kansas City or Baltimore, though.
No, I just don't see it. New England is just really kind of bad, and Tom Brady looks terrible, but I don't think we beat the Ravens. I don't think we beat the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think if they are able to jump the Chiefs and get the 3 seed, they could go to the AFC Championship game. I think if that doesn't happen, they'll win one, they'll get knocked out by Baltimore.
It's just so funny how much, just looking at PFF again as I go, or I mean Football Outsiders as I'm looking around, by DVOA, by score differential, we are the most true 500 team I think I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
So we could beat somebody. We could get blown out by 50 points. We just don't know.
Yeah, and in the playoffs, you only get one shot at two, and you don't have that ability to bounce back from a bad loss, you know? So... I don't know. It should be interesting. I mean, I guess I say it should be interesting, but I kind of feel like how I can see it, you know, I can see it in the snow globe. I can kind of see it in some ways, but this team can be a lot better. They start throwing the ball downfield immediately and constantly instead of waiting until like the last drive of the game where they have to score a field goal to ice it. If they let the play action deep passing game be the driver of the offense instead of establish the run first down, this would be a much better team. And if they figure that out, I think they could have a chance against Kansas City or Baltimore, but they haven't. And I think that's the one setback for this set of the Houston Texans, holding them back from doing anything more than, you know, maybe being New England in the playoffs if it comes down to that.
Carlos Hyde on first down, 16 for 68 for 4.25 yards per carry, and that was a good game.
Yeah, it was a good game from him. It was a good one. Well, that'll be our show for tonight. We're a little hot, a little bit too long, but it works out all right. You know, people have to sit in traffic on the way to work, so it works out okay. But thank you for being on tonight, BFD. Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be back on, I guess, Friday morning, Thursday night. We'll preview week 16. And you see the schedule for Saturday? We have Houston, Tampa Bay at 12. We have San Francisco, Los Angeles at 7 o'clock. And we have New England Buffalo at 3 o'clock. It's spectacular.
It's a great game.
Oh, it's the best Saturday of football I've ever seen.
I've got so much work to do. I don't know how I'm going to handle this. I'm probably just going to turtle and watch football and work in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that works out pretty well, too. And I hope the great Pineapple Man in the sky is doing okay. He's not too sad that his Titans lost this weekend.
So did he die? You keep calling him the Pineapple Man in the sky. Did he die?
No, it's just fun to say that for rhetoric purposes. Okay. The best part of his costume, too, is he has a little raccoon on there. Because I guess the Texans, the Titans mascot's a raccoon, so he has a little raccoon on his pineapple.
Yeah, Bandit, because he goes and steals your meth.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope he's doing okay. But we'll talk to y'all later this week. My name's Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Bell Red Radio. And thank you for being on tonight, BFD.